Stand by for the Terry Saul Show in 5, roll tape, 4, cue Terry, 3, bring audio up, 2, stand by, 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station. We are KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and I'm so glad that you joined us this morning. Today, our special guest is Faye DeMeyer Onspa. Did I get it right?
You did it. I got it. Amazing. Onspa.
There you go. That's because I wrote it down.
I know. But pronouncing it and writing it is two different things. You pronounced it right.
Can you pronounce my last name?
Saltissimo. No.
Wrong.
I had your nephew in one of my classes.
You had my son in one of your classes.
Was it Brian?
Yes. Yeah, that's my son.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah. Well,
smart
okay.
Boy. Say your last name. Say your last name.
Can you say it?
I have to see it.
I don't have anything written.
No.
Saltalamacchia. Yeah.
It's a good name.
I like it.
Is it? What is it?
Italian. Sicilian.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So you know what that means? You ever mispronounce it, we'll break your kneecaps.
By the time I get done pronouncing it, I won't have knees. I'll have to have replacement.
13 letters. When my grandfather came over from Italy, there were 5 more letters on the front part of it, and he dropped the first 5 letters. Don't ask me why.
Were they all consonants too?
There was 2 more A's in there, okay. So made a total of 7 A's in there. They used to call me Alphabet in school. Hey, Alphabet! It's like, among other things.
Yeah.
It's been a fun name.
It is. Yeah,
all my ex-wives love it.
I like this, all of them. They love writing it out.
They do. With all the checks, right?
Yeah. I decided not to get married, again, because I thought I'd just find somebody I hate and hand them half of what I
earned. Oh, there you go.
Earned,
there
yeah.
you go. But you just got married.
I know. I'm just kidding.
So you just,
I did.
How long you been married now?
December 21st, we got married to a theme of a white Christmas. It was fabulous. People still talk about it. We had a snowball fight at our wedding.
Where did you get married at?
Oak Knoll Golf Course, yeah.
Was it snowing?
No, but you know,
made snow.
No, we had those little soft snowballs you throw indoors, and I had 240 of them, and they were flying.
Really?
And you know Tracy Weber, right? She's a singer here in town.
I think she does
Broadway.
Okay.
And she came, and she sang a melody from White Christmas, and Pastor Barrett did part of our service. Pastor Corey Nolan did part of our service, and wrapped up with Nathan Weber, Pastor Nathan, and it was awesome.
And then you had a snowball fight.
And then we had a snowball fight.
Now, did your husband at the time there know that that snowball fight was coming, or is he sitting there thinking, what the heck did I marry into?
I kind of did plan that instead of rice. I thought it'd be so fun to have those snowballs. I think he had to see them because I had this big basket full of, what's that? It's just, trust me on this.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's coming your direction.
It's not going to hurt. That's what I told him. It won't hurt you much.
There you go.
And they're soft. They're super soft.
So what do you do now? You teach up at the college?
I'm still at the college. I'm teaching psychology, human interaction, and I teach psych in the workplace there, which I love. I have about 26 and 29 students in each class, relatively. I've been doing that. This is my 23rd year.
Serious?
Yeah.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
How'd you get into radio?
I got into radio.
And why?
Funny story. This is a hilarious story. I walked into KYKN to do a commercial.
Okay.
$99 commercial, right?
Yeah.
Walked in, Justin was there. And
Justin, her?
Yeah. He's a cool dude.
I hired him over at KBZY.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah, he is. I coached him in soccer years ago.
And you know he's delivering mail now, right?
He's delivering mail?
Yeah.
Is he really? He does. I didn't know that.
It's so cool. Yeah, he's really a sound job, but he's having fun. But I walked in, I did my commercial, took no time, and he goes, so have you ever done radio? And I'm like, no, why do you ask? And he goes, I just wonder if you, I said, how would I go about that? And he goes, well, go talk to so-and-so. So he sends me to the mics. There were 4 mics at the time.
Okay.
And finally get to Mike Frith, who owned it, right?
Right.
And Mike folds his arms like this, like, why would anyone listen to you? They listen, and they goes into why they listen to Laura Ingle and Rush Limbaugh and all these people. And I'm thinking, literally, in my head, I'm going, he's really right. Why would anybody listen to me? And then I said, God, you got to help me here. And I just stepped back. I got that message that was delivered from God, and I just let him rant. And he can do rant. I don't know if you know.
Oh, I know that, yes.
The Frith can rant, right?
Yeah.
And so he was all done ranting, and I said, I'm an overcomer, and I'll bring overcomers to your station. I think this world has enough victims, don't you? And he said, okay, and he whipped a contract out, and there it was.
Really?
Yep.
That fast? So what did you do over there?
I did about 3 years with them. I did a show called The Faye Day Show, and the proposal was about this notion about bringing people into the studio that were overcomers, looking for people who had overcome in their life the typical drug addiction or the, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They really overcome amazing obstacles where they were actually doing something good to begin with and they had something just block them, right? And then how did they overcome it? And it was just my passion. And the way the name came about wasn't just my name. I would meet with my friends, you know, go out to dinner or take people to coffee or whatever. And after I'd leave the table, typically, this is the phrase I'd hear, thank you for meeting with me. I just needed a fay day. And that's how the name came about. So my very first show had about six of my friends in there. And we just did kind of an open mic sort of thing, talking about how we knew each other and kind of just getting to know why this show was going to be about overcoming.
Were you nervous at all?
No.
Was it taped or was it live?
It was live.
Okay.
Yeah, it was live.
Isn't that the best?
I think it's
live
so
radio
much.
So
I know.
Much fun.
It's like, yeah, if you make a goof. Okay, my example, I'm interviewing a drug and alcohol counselor who's talking, Serenity Lane, his name is Jerry, and I'm drinking at the time Diet Mountain Dew in a can. Right in the middle of the interview, I pop the can. No clue about it, because I don't have an alcohol problem, right? No, I really don't. I'm in denial. I really don't. No, but seriously. And all of a sudden, I went, oh, you guys, I just realized what that sounded like. That was a Diet Mountain Dew, and Jerry's sitting over there, and he goes, yeah, well, tell him whatever you want to tell him, Faye. I mean, it's just perfect radio. It was awesome.
Live radio was, I did live radio for 20-some-odd years when I was over at KBZY there, and it's fun.
It is fun.
Because it's what you say is what they hear.
When you capture the emotion, I mean, there were times, and you've interviewed Barron, you know, before you knew how emotional and, you know, just how passionate he is about kicking cancer. And so different people like that, you know, I interviewed some people who'd come out of sex trafficking or been a lady who literally was driven to a garbage dump and said that if she didn't do what this man wanted, that she would be buried here. And kidnapped for days, finally got released, right? And 47 years later, I'm interviewing her. She's telling of her experience. And this woman lives down in Eugene. Her name is Natalie Lawson, and she's an amazing overcomer. But the trauma that and how it wreaked havoc in her life, she overcame it, raised great children, wonderful husband, stable woman of God, you know, and just to see that. And the idea isn't that we want people to hear of all trauma. We want people to hear that you don't have to stay stuck in that. That's an example, but we both lost it. When she's telling her story, we, you know, the tears were there. And you can't not hurt when people hurt.
Mine was just recently, since I've been here at this station, years ago. In another life, I worked for the Sheridan, Colorado Police Department. We just took a call of a little girl that was kidnapped, and it ended up being a real kidnapping. The guy drove by her house, opened his car door, asked her to get in, said he had some candy. She got in, and off he went. For 3 days, the entire city and state of Colorado was looking for this little girl. We looked everywhere and anywhere. It was a couple that were bird watching from Pennsylvania that happened to be coming across an outhouse in the mountains, just outside of Colorado, outside of Denver there. And the wife said, stop, I need to use the restroom. And the husband looked at that outhouse and says, let's keep going. This one just doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. They drove on for another couple of minutes. The wife says, go back to that outhouse. There's something there. Go back to that outhouse. And so they went back, and they could hear this little girl crying. And when they opened the door, down in the pit was little three-year-old Lori Poland. He dropped her down there, and she stayed there for 3 days. You know, they obviously got her out and everything. But the point to all that is that when I was working for the police department then, we didn't come home for 3 days because we were working around the clock trying to find this little girl. And I interviewed her 37 years later, just a couple of weeks ago. Mm. And she's an awesome woman. She helps children, battered children. And she's a mother of three. Mm. She's doing just great, beautiful woman. Mm. And she's just doing great. And it brought back such hard memories for me that during the interview, I lost it again. Uh-huh. And I thought, no. And I remember when we were taping the show and we were editing it, I could hear my voice losing it. And I thought, oh, I got to take that out of there. And my wife was there. She goes, leave it in. Yeah. Leave it in, because that was such an important part.
Yeah.
And again, it's like to say, she overcame that.
Yeah.
You know, 37 years later, she's now helping children that are in that not kidnap children, but children that need help.
That's right. That's
right. And she's doing that.
And hopefully no one will ever go to the kind of extreme that she did. It's interesting, I think, how God uses the suffering that we go through to bring us to the highest part of the mountain where we really get to be refreshed by Him. It's, you don't want to go through that, and you don't want anybody else to go through that. But once you've been there and God has taken you to that high place where you conquer the lie, you conquer the fear, you conquer the anxiety.
You conquer the lie.
Yeah, yeah, you do. You conquer the lie. And the lie is this: you're not worth anything. Who do you think you are? You're not good enough. That's the lie. And I believe that's what God
Where's
has called
us. Where's that lie coming from?
It's coming from the father of lies, which is Satan. It's not a person. Even these people who are evil, I mean, they are being used by this father of lies. But it's coming from the enemy of our soul. And God wants us to be overcomers.
I'm going to throw you a curve. What has been the lowest part of your life? Did you ever have something that was just, you were hitting rock bottom, thought it can't get any worse than this?
I think probably 5 years ago, it was January of 2016, so 4 years ago. If this January, it'll be five. My husband had left in November. I was feeling that abandonment, revisiting my childhood abandonment.
Okay.
And I went to a friend's house. We were doing a thing for our church. And just as I was leaving, my friend told me that I should, did I know that my ex-husband was engaged and that he was expecting, right? And I mean, everything in me, it was already painful. It was 5 months from his leaving. And she just left me with that. She saw it on Facebook sort of thing. And I looked at her and I said, number one, I never want to hear what he's doing. Please don't tell me. You can look all you want. Feel free. But I'm not following him. And, but thanks. And I left. I got in my car. And I remember feeling the kind of depression that makes you not want to live.
Really?
And it was beyond weeping. I mean, it was that kind of depression, that kind of down, that kind of, why, God? Why am I even here?
Were you thinking of hurting yourself?
I was. Really? I was.
Really?
And I had a .38 in my car.
Okay.
And I was sitting out front of her car, and I couldn't drive. I couldn't drive. And for people who know me, I drive like a crazed weasel. And I couldn't drive. And I just sat there, and I said, God, what do you have planned? I thought I heard from you. I thought you said you were going to restore. You know, and he, all of a sudden, he just voiced into my heart and my ears, Faye, you're enough. What he does doesn't define you. And I'm like, and I just wept. I wept at that reassurance. But for that minute, that I don't know how much time had transpired, but I stayed in front of her house so long she came out, but I couldn't drive. And it was the lowest that I can remember feeling. Now, we're talking a child who was left, who came home from school at 10 years old and your parents drove off and left you. We're talking a woman who, when I was 7.5 years married, find out my husband's having an affair after you literally wait for one person. We're talking somebody who has seen their children totally objectively reject them. Okay. So I've had some experiences, right? This was worse.
Really? How long were you married?
It could have been my age, 10 years.
Okay.
It could have been my age. It could have been the idea that he went on to marry and now he's having a family and he lied and said he never wanted a family. It could be that I sold everything and did everything to basically make a life with us. And basically I was the financial provider for that household. I don't know what it was, but it hit me harder than anything. And I loved him. Mm-hmm. I loved him a lot. And I just thought I'd be single at 61 for the rest of my life. And that was just a hard thing to swallow, to be honest with you, because I'm a good wife. I'm a good partner. I'm a good, caring person. And I'm not leave worthy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I see people who are so mean to each other. And I'm like, why do you stay with that person, right? And I'm not that one. And so but God showed me in that moment in time, I will be your husband. I will be your caretaker. I will be the one who'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. And I felt that overcoming spirit come back. And it took me a while, but that was a low point, very low.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guests. You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. We'll be back with more with Faye in just a moment. Stick around.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Weekend Show. We are talking with Faye DeMeyer on Spa.
So good.
I like saying that, on Spa. What does that mean?
It's a German name, and I don't know the actual meaning of it. I just know it's German, 100% German.
We were talking on our last segment there about relationships and how sometimes when they go south on us that it can really affect you. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that you thought of harming yourself and you had means to do that. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you?
I knew that God had a purpose for me. I've always known that. I've known that since I committed my life to Christ at 9, just before my parents left me. I committed my life to Christ. And I know that my purpose is to plant seeds, and you can't plant a seed if you're dead. And that's my job. And so if I don't plant seeds, I'm not doing what God called me to do.
When you thought about harming yourself, you said that the weapon was in your car with you.
Yeah.
Did you look at it?
Nope, I didn't.
Where was it?
It was in, I have a Cadillac, so it has a little place.
It's compartment
in there. Yeah. I went to reach for it, and I went, I'm not even going to take it out.
Good for you.
Because if I take it out, it means that I am considering something that I know would be a violation of the one I serve. There's a higher calling than sometimes your deepest pain. And your highest calling is to honor God. And you can't honor God by killing yourself. And you can't honor God by continually beating yourself up over the things that happen to you. And that is also not the overcomer that God has born in me. He bore that in me. I have no idea where that comes from except for him. I know who I am because I know whose I am, and therefore I know what my purpose is, and my purpose is to honor him. And so I just quickly went back to, who am I? I asked myself that question, who am I? I mean, apart from, you know, all of this, the things that I do, who am I? And just God just flooded me with, you're mine. I created you. I knew you when you were born, when you were literally born. I knew you from that time on, when you were 3 and a half and you're standing in Sepulveda Boulevard screaming for your parents, and this big African-American cop comes up and says, we'll find your parents, little girl. It's okay. You know, I knew you. I picked you up. I set you aside, and you're alive today because of that. I knew you when you got hit by a car and knocked into the Colorado River and were underneath that car until they could get it off you. I knew you. I was the one that made that happen. I was the one that got that car off you so you could literally be living and talking today. You're mine. And so no amount of your effort to be a pinhead to try to get rid of that's going to change it.
So if you would have done it, I wouldn't have an interview today.
That's right.
So what do I be talking about?
It'd be like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Nice day today. Have you ever spoken with anybody in your teachings and stuff that has thought of harming themselves?
Oh, yes, I do. I have a pastoral counseling practice. And so the first thing that usually that I do is just listen to their story, because 99% of the time, people don't want to harm themselves. They just want the pain to stop. And the pain doesn't stop necessarily by telling your story, but the pain is released out of us through that. My thing, who was I going to tell that I feel like the worst possible, lowest, unusable, unworthy person? I just walked out of my friend's house, and she made it okay in her head to tell me that my husband was engaged. So I'm not going to go tell her, right? And I just didn't have anybody at that time that I felt like I wanted to burden with that. And that's the biggest lie that the enemy will try to teach, that nobody wants to hear about it. Because wouldn't you want to stop your friend from harming themselves?
Exactly.
You'd want them to come and say, I decided long ago, years ago, to make my number one friend God. I knew that no matter if anybody left me, he would never leave me. And it's been true. I mean, it's been a solid true. He says, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you, ever.
You pray to him daily?
Oh, I devote. I don't just pray. I devote to him. And it's not more.
Has he answered your prayers?
Yeah, on a regular basis. In fact, today, this morning.
You were hoping this interview would go different, right? You prayed to him that Saul will be nice to me.
No, but today in my devotions, one of the things that we were praying about is, God, I want you to be present. I want an encounter with you. I don't want to just seek your hand for what you can do. I want to seek your face for who you are. I want that kind of intimacy with God. And so, my husband and I do a devotion together. And we were in prayer about that. And next thing I get a call just before coming to your station from a lady down in Eugene who's suicidal and who was feeling this like terrible lack in her life. And she said, you talked about it. You talked about the mountain. You talked about how we're going to suffer. We're going to go to that mountain, that high place that the enemy tries to ride on and run roughshod over his, over God's people. And you went there and you said, we're going to have to climb that mountain. We're going to have to experience that suffering and that struggle to get to the pure water that's on top. Because when you go to a snow-top mountain, that's where the purest water is, right? And that's the Holy Spirit. So she called me. So that prayer was answered for an encounter with God. And then by that encounter, then it just comes back around to relationship, right? Which is the whole point.
Not to change the topic a little bit, but depression. I'm learning a lot about depression. Not that I don't feel I'm depressed, except when the wife says, go clean the garage.
Yeah, yeah. That'll do it for anybody.
Depression and anxiety, it's a serious issue, isn't it? Depression is very real.
It is. It's a brain chemistry reaction, and it's called a lack of hope.
A lack of hope.
This idea that you don't feel like you have a pathway or the material or mental material to be able to cope with what's right in front of you. There's actually a scale called the Hope Scale by C.R. Snyder. And I'm telling you, it is amazing to see how many people lack hope. There's a correlation between lack of hope and this belief that either luck, chance, fate, or powerful others control you versus you control your own life. And it's interesting, when you give everything to God, it kind of doesn't matter if you're in control or not. You know who is. It's different. But the planet actually has neurological ways for people to, their brain to be viewed while they're either experiencing this idea, I can or cannot control. You have more T-fighting cells, more B-fighting cells, which is cancer and infection, if you have hope, if you have this belief that you can control your life to the extent possible, right? And those people who believe that luck, chance, fate, and powerful others control them, they have less of those cells to fight. So for me, I'm thinking the worst that could happen is I could believe something and be healthier in the process, right? And they found this out with a guy about 20 years ago called Norman Cousins. It's probably 40 years now. But he, remember that? It was in psychology. He got diagnosed with cancer and people said, you're going to die. How do you feel? He goes, I'm not going to die. And because of his attitude, He lived into his 80s. He got diagnosed as a young man, you know, and so we see that kind of thing, but they didn't have the science behind it now. God has provided great scientists to come in and bring science up to speed with what God already told us, which is exciting.
My mom went through that. She was diagnosed with cancer, they told her you have 6 to 8 weeks, and she says, I'm not going to be ready to go in 6 to 8 weeks, and she ran a year and a half longer.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, she went on her terms. She even told us the day she was going to die.
Oh, did she?
She was spot on.
Wow.
She told us, my dad died on the 22nd of December, and she says February 22nd will be my last day. And It was weird because she woke up that morning, and we were there with her, and she looked up at the calendar above her bed, and she says, what's the date today? And I said, the 22nd. And she looked at me and smiled, closed her eyes.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wait a minute. I should have told her the 19th. You know.
Have 3 or 4
Hey, we
days.
Need to take a short break here. When we come back, we're actually going to get into what we wanted to talk about originally today. Our guest today is Faye DeMeyer Anspaugh.
We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We are back. This is The Terry Saul Weekend Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host. Today, my guest is Faye DeMeyer Anspaugh, making her second or third appearance here today with us. How many times have you come in here and bothered me?
Oh, gosh. I'm guessing at least 3, at least.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. I mean, as often as I can think about.
Well, you know, the security out front.
They're not good.
They leave the door open, and then you never know who's going to walk in.
They like me. That's the other
There you go. There's a problem. What are you doing now?
I work for Connections 365.
What is that?
It's a therapeutic foster care organization. What we do is we provide foster care for youth who typically can't do like the safe homes that is pre-foster care or the standard DHS because they have higher level needs. Their trauma or their behaviors are to such a degree that they need a more trained proctor parent. We don't have just foster parents. We have proctor parents. They're proctoring them to learn the skills necessary to be adults.
Is there an age limit?
We go as low as 9 to about 18, you know, and then they transition to the adult program, which is a transitional youth program. We have a step down unit, 4-bed unit where we have coming out of McLaren, step down from McLaren into the community. So they stop with us and then they can go out back to their family or they can go to the community. And then we have a diversion program. So those are two residentials. And then we have foster homes in Albany, Dallas, Independence, Salem, West Salem. Couple of homes there. So we have, that's kind of the range right now. We've had up to 29 homes at one time, which was a lot.
How many children or kids are involved in this?
Right now, we're rocking a little over 20 kids that are involved. In addition to that, we have a mental health clinic, and the mental health clinic takes only Oregon Health Plan. So we serve that traditionally underserved mental health population. Typically, agencies like a private agency wouldn't want to take the health plan because they pay so low. Frankly, our organization literally thrives on making sure that population gets pre-help so kids don't have to go to foster care. That's one thing. And then as they're transitioning out, the family is integrated into that process. And then just regular folk out here who are on the Oregon Health Plan, I think 9 years old to 99. Anybody who wants to go, it's over on Commercial Street, 3340 Commercial Street, just below Venata Public Relations in that building. We have great therapists. We have 7 therapists and they're all licensed and the legal stuff that you need to be a good therapist, but they're also good people. That's really solid for me. Our director moved from a mentor to youth 15 years ago to being a director. That's a move of like really knowing. And still her passion is to literally be with the kids. I'll give you an idea. A recent, I don't know if you're seeing the battle that's going on between state agencies and agencies that get funded by the state not being able to have any political say or anything like that. This woman is so amazing that when those kinds of tensions come up, she knows how to navigate that and love the people who might have political opinions and also let them know how her back is against the wall, because we do take state funding and she wants to really be spot on with that. So she's just really good. She loves our Proctor parents and our youth, and we have mentors.
What is a Proctor parent?
It's that parent that is trained with trauma-informed care, therapeutic foster care training.
Okay.
And so they begin, again, they have that skill set to literally foster the kinds of skills that a person's going to need to be an adult. And it's different than just standard foster care, which people come in, you parent them like you kind of parent your own family. There's not a lot of extra training. There's some training you have to go through as standard, right? Like mandatory reporting, things like this. We go beyond that. We go many
years. So how do you determine whether or not a child needs just a standard foster parent or they need to come to Connections 365?
Well, a lot of times these youth have come out of a facility of some sort, either a mental health, a behavior facility like Jasper Mountain or the Corvallis Farm Home or something, been moved 20 times sometimes by the time they're 13.
Seriously?
Yeah. And we tend, here's the beauty.
What does that do to a child?
Well, I was in foster care from the time I was 10 to 18, and I was moved 4 times. The first time I was in a shelter home for a year, and then I went to a home for 3 years, then they got a divorce, so I went to another home. And that lady wanted 16 and above girls so they could babysit her 4 children. And so my foster father, who worked for OYA, lived next door, and he called up CSD and said, can we keep Faye till she graduates? Because he saw something in me. He saw this potential. Because I wasn't in foster care because I was a delinquent. I was in foster care because I had no parents. Right. That's a day and night difference, right? A lot of times youth act out at home, parents don't know what to do, and off they go into foster care. But there's a lot of us out there who are just abandoned kids where the parents couldn't do the work.
Can I ask you why you were abandoned? I mean, you said at 10 years old?
Yeah, I came home from school. There were 5 of us. My mom and dad drove off and left us.
All 5 of you?
Uh-huh.
I found her
when I was 20. I found my mom. I didn't
did
find my dad.
Did you talk with her?
I did. I took my oldest son, who was 9 months old. I said, thank you for leaving. I said,
really?
I am better off than if you would have stayed because you weren't ready to do that. And I want to release you. Because I was a believer. I want to release you to know that you're completely forgiven. And she died 2 years later.
Really?
Yeah. And I kept contact with her those 2
years. Did she tell you why she left?
Oh, yeah. I already knew why she left. Yeah. She was an alcoholic with my dad. She became what is called a codependent alcoholic to be able to thrive with him. And in that process, she just couldn't. And as soon as she left all of us kids here, they divorced.
Really?
Yeah. And she could have done that sooner, but she didn't know it.
So with five of you. Were you in the five?
I'm the second one. My oldest sister is 11 months, 22 days older than me, myself. My sister, Mary, she's up in Walla Walla, actually in jail right now. And then my brother, Sonny. And when I was 22, I took him in because his foster parents, after 7 years, said they didn't want to do it anymore. And that's a hard thing when you finally get bonded to a family to say, yeah, we're out. It's a double thing. You're abandoned at two, and now you're abandoned at 11, not quite
so
11.
So when this happened at 10 years old, and I don't mean to keep harping on this, but I just find this so interesting. You came home, and there's five of you kids at home. What did
you
do?
So here's what happened. I came home. Okay, and you know where the yard, the food court is?
Uh-huh.
There was a house in front of a trailer park right behind the yard. The house is still there.
Okay.
I came home, and my mom, remember, we were migrant workers, but we'd been put in foster care because of a big accident where my dad let my 8-year-old sister drive our car, and she plowed us into a telephone pole. So we were in foster care and just got given back to them. They just got us back not more than 5 months earlier. And I came home, and my sister Grace was tied up in a chair in the front room of this little shack.
What?
And she goes, go get help. So I went to get help on State Street, and I walked toward town. Now, what you don't know, and I didn't know at the time either, is I'm illiterate, so I can't read. I don't know where to get help and how to get help. And we'd been acculturated to believe that the cops were our enemy, so you're not going to flag a cop down, right? So I didn't know what to do. So I walked down to Front Street, and when I got back at 6 o'clock that night, everything was gone. So I was literally in the house by myself. Everything was in a pile in the middle of that house. And at 10 years old, I'm like, oh, I'll just live on my own. Because, see, we'd been taking care of our younger siblings this whole time. About 8 o'clock, it starts getting dark, and now I'm getting scared. I'm 10. I'm still 10, right? I'm a kid. And a cop came to the door, and it was the same cop, Officer Pruitt, that had found that accident 10 months earlier, and he took me to our shelter home that we were in before. So I found my older sister who'd gotten away, and she was in the shelter home, and I was relieved, Terry. I was like, oh, we're going to be in a house with food and beds and pillows and not living in a car. This is great. And I tend to be the comedian in our family, so I just started cracking jokes. And that's how I've coped with my life, is to kind of use humor to cope. My sister is very serious, and she played the role of a mom for a long time. She kind of went south, and, you know, I stayed steady. But as a believer, I always knew that God was going to restore me in some way. I just have always known that. I accepted Christ in a migrant camp in Carruthers, California. Right after that, a month later, my sister was ran over and killed by a car. She was five. So there would have been six of us abandoned, but she was killed a year before we got abandoned. It's been a journey, I'll be honest with you. It's been a real bad.
Were you ever angry at your parents or bitter at them for leaving you?
I was mad, and I didn't know it was at them. I didn't know who was mad. I was 13. I was in the foster home that I'd been in for 3 years now, and they were having trouble, and I was with a bunch of girls. We were going to go out shopping, and I got picked up shoplifting, okay? And I stood before Judge Felton. Now, I'd run away twice, and now I picked up shoplifting. And I stood before Judge Felton, and I had heard the same tone that judge used with me that the judge used with my dad in Fresno, not more than 3 years before that, saying, if you show your face in this courtroom, I'm going to throw the book at you. That's kind of the same tone. And I realized that all my anger and all my stupidity was now affecting me. I can't blame my parents, can't blame my foster parents. This is affecting me. So I sent up one of those really formal prayers, and God said, follow somebody's life who looks like you want your life to look. And I did. I found a girl at school who did school. She knew what she was doing. People were nice to her. She was nice to them. And I mimicked her. I was like a little mimic. If she said hi, I said hi. I said it the way she said it, how she said it. And I began to like who I was. She taught me how to read. She discovered I couldn't read. We were trying out for a dance team. She hands me the book to sing and dance. I just looked at it and smiled. And she goes, no, go ahead.
You were afraid to tell her that you couldn't read, or you're embarrassed?
Yeah, she goes, go ahead. Yeah, and I go, I just smiled, right? And she goes, you don't know how to read, do you? And I'm telling you, Terry, the shame that washed over me when she asked me that question was, I couldn't tell you. It was just so heavy. And she goes, that's okay. I'll help you. And she taught me how to read. And I will always be grateful to Paula for that. And we tried out for the dance team and made it. And it was awesome. I feel like education and reading was a salvation to me. And today, my sister calls me an overachiever, but I teach to learn. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I teach to learn. And everything I read, I want to teach it. It's got to have some relevance to it. Everything has to have relevance to it. So It's really hard for me to sit and do girl talk, like about nails and stuff like that, because it's not, there's no substance to it. Does that make sense? So I struggle. I'm not the go shop girl. And I'm not, you know, I'm just not that kind of a fun girl that way. I can have fun, but it's just, I don't get joy out of sitting around talking about nothing.
In your life, I mean, you've been dealt some rotten cards in your life, and yet you're still...
I still have a full house.
You still have a full house. That's right. That's a good
point.
I still
have a full house. Good point. Jesus, you know. And and if it weren't for him, honestly, I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know how people do it without knowing God. Knowing the person of who God is, the character, that he doesn't change. There's no shadow of turning, that he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He will sustain you. He'll take you by his right hand.
In our last 30 seconds here before we have to go on this, if God wasn't in your life, where would you be right now, do you think?
I'd be in a prison somewhere.
Do you really think so?
I do, and I'd be totally high. I would. I'd probably be beaten to death by some guy. My mom was battered terribly. Terribly battered. 13 pregnancies. She lost about 5 of them to assault and battery.
Really?
Yeah. And 1 to the car running over my 5-year-old sister.
We need to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warm up. Today's show is being brought to you by the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group. We're back in 5, 4, Q Terry, 2, 1, you're on. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM, brought to you today by the Lule Group.
We are back with our final few minutes. Today's guest has been Faye DeMeyer on the spot. I like saying that. It just kind of flows.
It does.
It has a certain flow to it, you know? What are some of your interests?
Well, believe it or not, I love politics.
Do you?
I do, because they're so centered in values, right?
Yeah.
I'm loving this time we're in. A lot of people are upset with this time we're in, but we're in a crucial time, I think, to really...
I think it's exciting.
I do, too. To delineate this hardcore difference between the Trump campaign and the Kamala campaign. And I'm using Harris and Trump because that's how it's going to lay
out, right?
But one of the things that
Did you watch the debate the other night?
I watched the aftermath.
Vice presidential
debate? I was on my way back from Bend. My foster mother turned 90, and so I went to her birthday. So that was really cool. Coming back from Bend, I was listening to how it went. And when I did see it on the news as a replay, I saw the fly on Pence's head, and I saw him not flinch. I saw him just stay steady and stalwart. And though there's a couple of things he's having to defend that aren't his issue, and I saw very little of the substance coming from asking him questions about how he would run it if he were president. And I would like to see that, and the same for Ms. Harris. But here's something that came across my purview today. And because I love politics, and a lot of people know that, they send me stuff.
Okay.
And so I'm fortunate that way. I remember a few years ago when 2 undercover journalists exposed the Planned Parenthood was selling aborted baby parts. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's a Class A felony. And the guy named David, who did the video, went to jail for that. And the California Attorney General...
The guy that shot the video went to jail for
went
that.
Went to jail for doing the video, because it's illegal to do a video in California, but it's illegal to do it privately in private session without telling somebody. He didn't do it privately. He did it at a restaurant where what that person was saying about selling body parts could have been overheard by anybody.
Right, right.
So he did it legally. There were literally 60 years of people doing videos up to that point in private, and she never prosecuted. right? And she's not been in that long. She's been in there 30 years, right, as AG. And so she prosecuted him. At that time, it says, the California district prosecuting attorney, the journalist never did anything against Planned Parenthood, just did the video. The attorney general was Kamala Harris. And what's interesting...
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, Kamala Harris. So the point is she is A, for Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood is selling baby body parts. Now, what we don't know about...
Does that piss you off?
Oh, it just makes me want to slap somebody in the face.
Yeah.
It does. In the face, I'm telling you. And what kills me about this is Margaret Sanger started Planned Parenthood. She wanted to eliminate the African-American population. And so she was... Definitely, she used the terms that she was against the Negro, and we can't have the Negro populating anymore. We just got to stop that. So let's develop this. So they, even the Planned Parenthood that all these Democrats support, is actually against the African Americans who are voting for these Democrats. 47 years Biden's been in office. Of those 47 years, he has made so many racist decisions against the African American, one being to lower their ability to make money. In the time, in 3 years, not almost 4 years now, that Trump has been in office, he's raised the socioeconomic ability of African Americans by 65%.
Wow.
I know, that's crazy. When you take somebody in that population who have just been struggling and struggling, and you raise their ability now to go to school. He changed the prison law. If you didn't have a violence offense, you could leave. If it was just a drug offense, if no violence occurred, no gun, nothing, you get to go. I mean, Obama and Biden could have done that over 8 years. He did it in less than the 3-4 years that he's been in, or all the while he's being buffeted against on every side. So that kind of thing intrigues me. How could the populace of Democratic people be that unpersonal thinking that they would just swallow it because they're a Democrat? Why would you do that? Oregon's kind of a unique state in that it'll often vote people. And I learned that. I don't know if you know this, but I ran for county commissioner in 1996 myself.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then again in 98. And I ran on a write-in ticket in the primary in 96, and I won by a third of those. I didn't win the general because I was running against incumbent. At the time, his name was Mike Probst, and he's since actually killed himself. But
I know Mike over in Polk County.
Yeah, good guy. Good guy.
Big, big tall Mike.
Big tall Mike.
Yeah.
He was my boss. The county commissioners, I worked for Polk County Mental
Health.
He
committed suicide, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah,
he did. But I think there was something illness-wise that hurt him. But anyway, and I'm sad about that. And his wife, Pat, and I just bless her heart, prayed for them a lot. But anyway, and then I ran against Ron Dodge. I was running on a Democratic ticket at the time. But I went to the platform forming committee. This is where my excitement of politics came in. And this guy, we were, it was a forum. What were we going to do on education? So I was in that one, right? Because I was a teacher. This guy offered something and they wouldn't write it down. And I said, wait. We're the party of inclusion. Yeah, but we don't believe that. I said, woo. We're the party of inclusion, but because we don't believe it, we don't include it? No, you're not. You're lying. And I couldn't abide by it anymore. Yeah. And from that point on, I wasn't a Republican. I wasn't a Democrat. I was an independent. Because I knew that this completely on this end and this completely on this end, in the middle was the truth. And that's why all the time that I've done anything on radio, I always want to bring both factions. Speak what you're really going to do, not what people's itching ears want to hear, and let the people decide. But Kamala Harris sat on that stage and she told people what she wanted them to hear. She doesn't plan to do it. How do I know? The evidence.
Evidence.
There is empirical evidence that Trump is for people. There's empirical evidence that Kamala is for Kamala. And she will lie and cheat and steal and do whatever she can to get voted in and then do whatever the hell she pleases. And I'm sorry, there is just something completely wrong about that.
I have a friend of mine who, when Trump was running for the presidency, spent the day with him. And he came back out and said, so what's he really like? He goes, he is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He's generally, he barks the bark when he's pushed up against a wall.
I want that in a president.
I do too.
I want
But they
fighter.
Said he's just a nice guy.
Yeah,
he actually cares about people.
And Republicans don't like him because he's not nice. Guess what? Nice doesn't get your country back. Nice doesn't get your trade deals. Okay? Yeah. That's not going to be nice. You got to be a negotiator. He has only taken $1 of any income ever offered to him. The rest is donated. Yeah. Did you know
his entire salary, his presidential salary, he's never taken any of it.
Yeah. So he didn't go in it for the money. And he's leaving less wealthy than when he came.
Wow.
And that's the first president ever to do that. He has nothing to lose. And I'll tell you, when he wins, the lid is going to be blown off. Have you heard of adrenochrome?
No.
Oh, the next time I come back, we got to talk about adrenochrome. Okay. It is the biggest scandal out there right now.
All right. We are just about out of time. Would you come back? I love talking to you. We could just sit here and talk for hours.
I know, we could, actually.
And maybe when you come back, maybe come back after the election.
Okay.
Which is not too far down the road here. And we come back and we'll do
25 days.
Something like that. Real quickly, is there a Facebook page people can get in touch
with? Yeah, you can just go to Faye DeMeyer on Spa Facebook and just hit a little like there and let me know what you're thinking. Also, The Faye Day Show is just all in caps, The Faye Day Show. And you can go on either one. I do promote businesses. I like to promote good stuff. So if you have a business you want promoted, let me know.
Okay. Faye, thank you for stopping by, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Come
Thanks
back to Doris again.
It's been fun.
We're just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 6 p.m. right here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.